Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very pleased and honored to be able to come to you live and in living color. Tonight's program, of course, is another powerhouse. For those of you who receive our e-blast, then you know we're going to talk about something very serious. Once again, we're going to talk about a young brother who was beaten very, very badly, roughly around September, I believe, the 23rd. We're going to talk to his mother, Sister Shahida, and we're going to ask for your support, your help, because this young man has been traumatized with 52 stitches in his face and head. And the person, the white male that did this, 16 years old, got a suspension for one day. Well, you know we can't have that. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to also talk about, of course, for those who did not hear today, food stamps kind of went to a halt. I'm telling you, I got all kinds of calls, and where some cities reported that, oh, it was a glitch and it didn't interfere with anything, that's not true in some other cities. I know we got several calls, and believe me, folks was not able to access that today in certain locations. So we think that was a test to see how people would respond. We're going to talk a little bit about that, too, because we think some things are really coming. But we're going to also talk about the updates, or shall we say, we're going to give you some updates on the murder of Malcolm Latif Shabazz. Yes, there are some updates, and of course, Dr. Randy Short is going to give us that. Before we begin tonight's program, of course, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we are certainly very appreciative for our freedom-fighting ancestors. You are in tune to New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we want to also remind you that very, very soon we will be observing the 16th year anniversary commemoration of the largest gathering in the world known as the Million Woman March. Now, tomorrow is going to be very interesting, and I'm going to give you some information about an event that I'll be attending here in Philly. One of our favorite groups, the Universal African Dance and Drum Ensemble, will be having their, I think it's 35th, I have to check to see what year, but they're going to be having one of their dinners that they have annually. And it just so happened, now we gave you information previously about a documentary that was being made about the Million Woman March. We were very, very dissatisfied with what we saw, and certainly very, outraged by the way it was being done in terms of not contacting anyone from the national office prior to it getting underway. We heard about it by chance, if you want to use that phrase. I happened to listen to a radio program in 2011 on the day of the Million Woman March anniversary, as a matter of fact, and I was just tuning in to just see what they were going to talk about in terms of the Million Woman March, and lo and behold, here comes someone talking about a documentary that they were doing, and I knew absolutely nothing about it. And actually, they said that they had pretty much done it, I think, because they had already planned the showing for it. At any rate, I'm going to give you more information about that because, as it turns out, Mr. Joyce Tillman is supposedly coming to Philadelphia tomorrow. It just so happened that Sister Pam Africa was also outraged, and she called Mr. Tillman. So we're going to tell you a little bit about that and how we are attempting to see how this thing can be, I dare say, work out, but nevertheless, we're going to tell you about that a little later on as well. At any rate, we want to remind you again, we're going to open up the chat room probably in about 10 minutes. We want to get Sister Shahida in. We want to make sure that all of you are really able to, tune in and ask the questions that you need to ask, because this sister really, really needs your support. We need your support. This young man, her son, again, has been brutally beaten. Now, this is a very interesting situation, family, because all over the country, schools are being closed. In Philadelphia, we're talking about 28 schools, and there is a projection for some other ones. So now, what does that mean in reality? Well, that means if 28 schools are being closed here, there's a projection for more. That means that schools are going to be combined. That means that schools that children who are going to school in or live in one area of the city will be shipped off, bussed off, or whatever, to some other areas of the cities. So that could tend to be a volatile situation, as it has proven to have been in the past. So now when you have all these schools closing, there are not many options. So what we want to also ask tonight is, what are we going to do? What are some of the options that we need to have? We're going to talk about that. We're going to ask that question because one of the reasons why this has happened to this young man, 12 years old, being beaten by a 16-year-old, is because it is said that the 16-year-old is on some form of medication. Now, what does that also mean? That means that it appears children that have behavioral problems are being lumped in with other children. So, again, when you have schools closing massively as they are, as I said, in Philadelphia, we're talking about 28. In other cities, we're talking about 50. In other cities, you know, maybe 10. But nevertheless, the bottom line is schools are, in fact, being closed. So that means the grouping of children is going to be in some form of displacement or worse. So, again, we want to kind of give you some insight into why some of these things are happening, why we think that these things are going to be happening more in the near future, and how we need to begin to prepare more so with the expectation of that and to focus more on independent education. Now, of course, some of what we're going to talk about tonight is futuristic in a way of speaking. There are some things that are in place, and we're going to begin to investigate and learn more about the various types of homeschooling that might be available, and also convey to you some of what we foresee happening in the very near future under the MWM umbrella we're providing you of that type of service. So, again, we are going to talk about tonight several things: unity, solidarity, the building of the first global movement for all women and girls of African descent, but also, as a community, isn't it time that we have our own schools, our own bank, our own health facility? Isn't it time that we have our own? Didn't we used to have some of that before? So why is it in 2013 you can kind of count that stuff with one hand? Things that make you want to go, we better start getting it together and doing what we know we're supposed to do, because this system is crashing and it is coming down on us. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Sister Shahida Manley, and we're going to talk about her son and perhaps other sons and daughters who have been subjected to something as a result of being in a public school, not having the proper protection. Because when you hear this story, family, you're going to be outraged, because it's not just this child was beaten. Also, some teachers stood around and let it happen. We'll be right back.
I'm
Okay. You are again in tune to New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we're going to have some very hot dialogue tonight. So for those of you who might, have kind of a queasy stomach or something to that effect, you might not want to tune into this dialogue tonight because it's going to be live. It's going to be live. It's going to be very candid. When it comes to our children, we should not tolerate anything beyond, just standing up and protecting and defending. I mean, it's just that simple. We should not tolerate anything that we know is wrong, is an injustice. We just cannot allow it. And so what we're going to talk about tonight is a very clear case of that and why you all must help get involved in some kind of way, be it to sign a petition, be it to call the school. I mean, we'll determine the actions as we proceed in this dialogue tonight and in future dialogues, but you have to know that these things are going to be happening because the way this system is now structuring itself, it's really about incarcerating us, okay? And so while other people are able to get away with murder, Mr. Zimmerman, needless to say, people of color, black folks in particular, are catching hell and it's going to catch even worse, okay? And we're being set up. I mean, we're going to talk to a mother who, is in pain and certainly is outraged. Now, some folk don't really know how to handle that, and this system knows that. And so, in reality, we have to be very clear about what's going on and how we're being set up. So what we're going to do is get ready to go to our live line, and joining us is going to be Sister Shahida Manley, who is residing in the Pittsburgh area, and that is in good old Pennsylvania. And so what we're going to do is talk with her about what is happening to her son. And we're going to open up the chat room in about 5 minutes so that you all can also post your comments there. And we're going to open up the lines for you all to also communicate, give us your opinion, your comment. And, let me see. What I'm going to do is something, I'm going to go right now directly to Sister Shahida. The caller, if you're at 6100, I want you to please hold on there. We're going to bring you in as soon as we talk with Sister Shahida. And I think we have her right here. I hope we have her right here. Let me see if I got the right mic for her. Sister Shahida, do we have you?
Yes, ma'am, you do.
Yes, all right. Very, very good. Thank you for joining us for this segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. And I just want you to know that it was certainly a pleasure to meet you, unfortunately, under the circumstances that it is. But nevertheless, I applaud your strength. And certainly, we are here to help strengthen you even more so, and also to provide whatever support we possibly can. And we're going to start with letting our people know what has happened, because a lot of times when certain things happen in a city, unless one of these so-called leaders decide they want to pay some attention for the photo op or whatever the mouths they're going to get out of it, unless you're connected to something like that or they made that decision that year, we'll take this one. A lot of times the information, the story, the situation doesn't get out there, doesn't get publicized. Again, this is how the system is structured. Well, we've got to break through that. I've done it before. I'm sure many of our listeners have done it before or participated in something that's done it before. And so we're about to do that now. So, my sister, the mic is yours. Take your time. And introduce yourself, and then please go into telling us what happened to your son.
Okay, my name is Shahida Manley. I'm from Pittsburgh, PA, born and raised. I'm 32 years old, and I'm a single mother of 5 children. On September 18, 2013, my son, 12-year-old Shannon Grant, he was brutally attacked in the cafeteria at Presley Ridge Day School, which is a school that is structured for mental and behavioral students. They were in a cafeteria where the attack took place over by the garbage can. Presley Ware stated that day that there were seven teachers and 14 children, two of the children being the attacker and one being my child. Shani and the attacker were over at their garbage can where the incident all started, emptying off their plate. My son said, what's up to him, just being, you know, friendly. The attacker then swore at Shannon to let him know, don't you say nothing to me, and lifted up his plate. My son told him, you know, you're not going to hit me with that plate. The attacker then lifted that plate up, swung it, and hit my baby on the side of his face, the left side of his face. My son attempted to run away, but then became unconscious and hit the ground. The attacker then ran over, hopped on him, and continued to punch him or slice him 4 to 5 times in his face. That's when staff then ran over and intervened with pulling the child off of him and dragging my son to safety. The school then notified me to let me know that my son, there was an incident that occurred in the cafeteria where my son had was attacked and hit in the head with the plate by another student, but never mentioned that it was something that needed to be immediately to seek attention. They actually drove him in their company vehicle versus calling 911. And they allowed that student to stay in the school the rest of the day until school was over. After my son and I were over at Children's and he received 50-plus stitches, then me and my mother had to go back over to the school where we had to press charges on the child. The police officer came out, took the report, went back to the station, notified the parents. The parents then brought the child down to the police station where he was placed under arrest. The child is now in our Schuman Detention Center. He was placed on a 10-day mental evaluation hold. We went to court. There was a continuance done. We go back to court October 17th for the to be possibly another continuance or a withdrawal throughout the case. The DA had notified me yesterday that they would not be able to charge this student as an adult due to his mental status, that he would probably be placed in a 3-month mental institution, but it was up to the judge, or he just may be released, period. So my thing that I'm seeking is to fight for justice for my child to make sure that that does not happen. My child, you know, he cries some nights about having headaches. He also has nightmares, you know, where he's screaming for help, and it's stressful, definitely stressful. Not only did I have to take him out of school, I had to pull my 8-year-old, who also attends Presley Ridge, out of school because he feared for his safety as well. I mean, the only thing that Presley Ridge has to say is that they're sorry about what happened, and that's not enough. That's not enough for me to accept from the school right now.
So at this point, my sister, who is it that who's expected to pay these bills, these hospital bills, these doctor bills?
From my understanding, when Victim of Violent Crimes reached out to me, they stated to me that because this child is not 18 years old, that his family did not have to take the responsibility for their child's actions, that my child will have to wait till the attacker turned 18 and possibly have a job to be able to afford to pay for those bills. Right now I'm in the process of going up against the school for negligence because, I mean, if you have teachers who sat around and watched and were able to give a full report of what happened, you know, that means that you sat there and you watched my child be brutally attacked. And that's just not something that's sitting right with me. I went back over to the school a day later and asked them for some type of footage, and they assured me that, you know, they had cameras, but they have not been working the last past 6 years. So,
how convenient.
Right. How convenient. My child, he started Presley Ware 6 years ago. So when I walked in that school, those cameras, you assured me they were working. You know, your school also, and your policy and procedure ensures the safety of all staff and students. and on September 18th, you have not ensured me that safety over my child. So now I'm left to, I was forced to quit my job, sit at home, you know, homeschool not one, but two children. And now with the DA being, I guess, timid against the attorney that, you know, his family hired for him, it's caused me to go out and have to do whatever to get the money up to possibly hire a lawyer to handle this criminal case. You know, I already have someone trying to work on the civil case, but Presley Ridge, as of September 23rd, has not yet responded to my lawyers.
Wow. And tell us again, how many stitches did your son obtain?
He received 50-plus stitches on the left side of his face, head, and neck. I mean, the cuts were so close, he cut over top of his temple. He could have sliced his jugular vein. You know, it's just a blessing that my child is still alive. You know, but he'll never get over the fact that this happened in school. I mean, I'm working very close with him. My family's working very close with him. I show him all the love and support that he's receiving on Facebook. I just want to thank everyone who has stepped up and shared his story and took support and took the time out to change their pictures and show that support and show him love on his page. Definitely grateful for that.
I'm going to open up the phone lines now because I really want folks to be able to ask you whatever questions that they need to get clarity, because our listeners are the type of people who are, they're about taking action.
Right.
And so, you know, so I just want to make sure that we have people who are writers, people who are activists, people who are paralegals and so forth and so on, who listen to our program on a national level. So I want to make sure that, you know, they have as much information as they would like to have. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go to you, Carla. You've been hanging in there for a while at 6100. Do you have a question or a comment for us tonight? Hold on. I'm opening up your mic now. I hope it's going to open. It's acting a little crazy. Let me try again. Okay, we should have you now. 6100. You have a comment or a question for us?
Yes, Sister Filet. This is Dorothy, the grandmother from Mississippi. I was just listening, and it just breaks my heart to hear about the incident at the school. And I hate to say this, Sister Filet, but you know what? If it was one of their children, the child would be under the jail. If it, you know, it would be one of our children done something, that child would be under the jail. That child, we couldn't even get our child out. And by the way, we couldn't even see our child.
That's right.
And they just, it our life, just like it has no meaning. It's not, I mean, not no meaning, no meaning. Well, I guess I could say that, no meaning, no value, no nothing. And it just sad that the school will let a child sit there and will not call his mother, even though they tuck him on, but didn't call his mother and tell his mother the severeness of it. I mean, that just unheard of. But see, it just like we don't have no value, and but we as a people got to stand up and say we're just not going to take it anymore.
That's right.
And we got to come together. You know, this child could have been killed. And I'm a mother, and I'm a grandmother. Just to hear this, it just breaks my heart. It just breaks my heart. It's sad for them to continue to get away. And I want to ask a question. Was it black-on-black crime?
No, it was actually a white student.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, they don't do that, but we got to continue, and then we got to continue to fight, because we need to even fight harder. Because if the shoe would have been on the other feet, that child wouldn't even get out of jail, wouldn't get out, our child wouldn't get out at all.
That's right.
Now they're trying to say every time they children do something, It's a mental thing.
Right.
And they play the mental thing because it will show nothing on their record, and then they would have no responsibility for it. Every time, it's a mental. But when we try to use mental, we can't even use mental. We can't even use stand your own ground. We can't even use that. It's okay for everybody else to use it. But that's where we got the band together.
That's right.
And if you need me to call or write, whoever you need me to do, I'll do that too. My sister, you just tell me where to go.
I've reached out so far to CNN. I've emailed Dr. Phil. I've emailed Oprah. I've even emailed Ellen DeGeneres. I've tried reaching out to some of their rappers and singers, you know, some of our local artists and some of our community leaders, and still no response. CNN, when I spoke with the woman who takes the reports daily, she told me that if this story was interesting enough, that they would give me a call back. I mean, I feel like, you know, because there was no death, they feel like it was, you know, it wasn't of an importance to them to have to take the story. Why does it always have to be death to occur for situations to be taken notice of?
Yeah, that is correct, because that's the way they did me, Sister Filet, concerning my granddaughters. They would always tell me, we'll take it, and if it's interesting, we'll call you back. And you never hear nothing back from them.
Nope.
Right. So, see, this is why it's so important that we become very, very, very well organized and position ourselves in a way that is going to represent power. You know, and this is why, again, later on I'm going to convey what the Million Woman Movement is going to be doing as we proceed to obtain what we call 3rd power, and that's power, prosperity, and peace. You see, we have to begin to learn how to strategize better and again, to organize effectively in this day and age, because if we do not, these people they've got a plan already, and they're putting it in motion. But what's our plan, you see? So we're going to talk more about that a little later on. But Sister Dorothy, I want you to thank you, and I want you to stay there because I'm going to bring you back in very shortly to kind of follow up with you as well. But I want to go to another caller for now, and I'm going to come back to you, okay?
That's fine, my sister.
All right, thank you. Okay, caller, let's see, you're at 6029. We're going to open up your mic. Do you have a comment or a question for us for tonight?
Peace, sister. This is Brother Haki.
Listen, hey, Brother Haki.
How you doing, sister? Listen, my you know, my heart goes out to the sister in Pennsylvania in terms of what transpired. You know, one of the sad realities in terms of the capitalist society that we live in is that this whole process in terms of dehumanization of human beings has increased in magnitude. I think that we have to be very, very concerned about the impact, both conscious and unconscious, in terms of, you know, how it impacts on people, and particularly how it impacts on children. I think with respect to the African masses, to our children, I think one of the things that we've been advocating for a long, long time, this whole issue in terms of institutions in the community. And we keep advocating institutions in the communities because it's important in terms of how we see ourselves. And if, in fact, if we're talking seriously about this in terms of being able to get together to mobilize, to deal with issues like this, then one thing, we have to have a common understanding of the world that we live in. Unfortunately, too many of us in the African community have internalized a great deal of individualism. We have internalized a great deal of hatred. And so, therefore, when things happen to our children, we don't become upset about it. I mean, as long as it doesn't happen to our children, it's okay. And so we don't see ourselves as part of a whole. And I think a lot of that has to do, in fact, with our lack of understanding in terms of history. And also, like I mentioned before, this internalization of self-hatred that exists among our people. And it is something that we've been trying to combat for a long, long period of time. But, of course, the immediate problem is that how do you compel people to look at themselves in terms of their behaviors? That's a much more difficult question. I don't think most African people want to deal with this whole issue in terms of self-hatred. even if they recognize it this in themselves, they're not likely to articulate that. So we get a reverse problem, but as a consequence of us not dealing with our problems, our kids are suffering. And sister, you're absolutely correct. One of the things that they're talking about now, and they're talking about in the next 7 to 10 years, they're talking 1 in 3 African youth would be imprisoned, not under auspices of the criminal justice system, but actually in prison, 1 out of 3. And it's just 2 years ago was 1 out of 7. So the numbers are growing, and it seems to me that we're attacked. But how do we convey this information to our people, you know, for some reason who are in this la-la land who doesn't seem to understand that this stuff is real, that what we contend with is real. And the impact on our kids is so great, you know, that if we don't do something, then the reality is in terms of being able to proliferate and to provide and to actually excel in society is almost nil. And so we have to do something in terms of getting our people to understand the seriousness of the situation that we're confronted with, and particularly has an impact on our kids. And one thing I would say, and I'm going to close with this, but I would say that one of the things that, you know, I think that may be a great help if more and more, you know, brothers and, you know, get involved in terms of, you know, like maybe not doing anything during the daytime, who actually volunteer themselves to, you know, to go down to the school and assist the youth, you know, to sort of be, you know, eyes and ears, you know, to make sure this kind of stuff doesn't transpire. Of course, I do understand, I'm not naive, because I do understand that those in the system who want to conceal a lot of kind of bad things that go on in these schools probably won't be open to, you know, people coming to the schools and see firsthand what's going on. But I think we have to organize and mobilize around the issue in terms of the safety of our children and also this issue in terms of educating our kids. But now, I want to make sure people understand that I'm not putting all the onus on the schools to educate our children. I think it's a partnership. I think that community, we need institutions in the community to make sure that information that's not imparted to our kids, we ourselves can provide the information to our children. I think it's very, very important we do that. And of course, the struggle continues. You know, how do we engage people on that level? I mean, we struggle continues, but I think it's probably the only real option in terms of moving forward in society because, as you say, sister, it's getting extremely hostile, against the African masses in the society. So we understand objectively that we are under attack, and we have to respond. We don't have any choice whether we want to or not. We have to stand up, and particularly, all too often, sisters stand up. But we need more brothers to stand up, you know, and take a role in terms of combating, you know, this injustice and the suffering, the marginalization of our communities. So, again, I just want to apologize. I'm real sad that it happened to the sister's son, you know, but, you know, the struggle continues.
All right, my brother. Thank you for your support.
Hey, sister.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, sister, you had a response?
Yes, I just wanted to let him know that I do thank you for your support.
Yeah, so, but... Yeah, but anyway, sister, I'm going to I'm going to stay abreast of this. Do you know, has there been any I know that you've been reaching out to various individuals in terms of trying to get this case out in the public's eye. But in terms of the local newspaper, has there been any coverage in terms of the local newspaper, or they have been pretty much silent in terms of this whole incident?
It's been inside the Pittsburgh Courier, it's been inside the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. WTAE, I had called them the day of it happened. They sent someone out that night, so it aired live on our local news station, and Channel 11 also had picked the story up. They just didn't give it enough airtime. It was a flash of what me and my son had to say, and it was off the air, and it was over and done with.
And what's been the response?
And that has been at least 3 weeks now. I mean, 2 weeks now. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. So like most things, Brother Haki, what happens is they'll do a quick blurb right when right at that time when it's happening, and then shortly after that you hear nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's pervasive, and it's happening all over the country. And I don't know what it's going to take to make our people understand the seriousness of a situation we're confronted with. I mean, because they don't have respect for us, and it's very important that our lives be perceived as esoteric because, you know, someone has to be the fall guy for this capitalist system. Nobody's going to talk about the greed and the corruption and the duplicity that exists in the system, which is responsible for all the ills of the society. They're not going to talk about that. They're going to simply scapegoat African people in terms of being the problem. And, of course, unfortunately, too many of us in the African community go along with that whole process and never stand up to even question what kind of things are going on. It goes without saying that the masses of most white folks, particularly poor white folks, who are pretty ignorant or are going to go along with whatever they're told with a spoon-fed on television. So they'll pretty much go along with whatever. But it's inexcusable in terms of our people not standing up when this kind of stuff happening, because this is outrageous. And I just want to ask the sister, what's been the response, particularly among brothers in Pittsburgh in terms of this incident?
I haven't really had any responses from anyone in Pittsburgh. I feel like people, you know, in different cities and different states have reached out to me more. Pittsburgh has absolutely shown me no love here. Mm. None whatsoever.
Mm-mm. I'm going to definitely talk with Brother Raza Khan. He's out of town right now, but I know he does a lot of work in Pittsburgh because they have a lot of different things that they do with social justice issues, and there's a couple of particular groups out there. So I'm going to make sure I touch base with him. I want to see him tomorrow. But Brother Hakeem, thank you so much for your comments, and stay tuned because Sister's going to give you her Facebook information so that, you know, you can kind of stay abreast of what's going on via Facebook. Do you use that? Are you active out there with that one?
I normally don't do the Facebook thing, you know, but I can access it. That's not a problem. So I'll just hold on. I'll listen and I'll get that information when she speaks.
All right, my brother. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go to caller. You're at 8712. We're going to open up your mic right about now, and please let us know who you are and if you have a comment or question for us tonight.
Hello, my name is Larry.
How are you, Larry?
Fine, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
I just want to say, you know, I've been listening at you, and I just want to say because, you know, it's bad when if it was a black kid to cut this boy here in school, you know what he would be? Mm-hmm. He'd be in jail.
That's right.
And the gentleman just got off the phone with you. He's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna tell you something. Now, you know, I don't use talking on the phone, but I listened to him a few minutes ago. He's right. But you know what? This world right here is conceived with white people. They do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do it. I just left Minnesota on a custody battle for our own grandkids. And you know what they done? We went to the Supreme Court. You know what they done? The Supreme Court gave the kids to the foster parents. And this is our blood. And the foster parents is white. It's white foster parents. And what really hurts me bad, because they got four kids of their own, and then they got five adopted kids.
Yes, we had Mr. Dorothy on last week, and she told us about it last week. And we're going to be talking more about that as well, because we know that this is going on all over the country. And, again, if we don't begin to prepare, these people are going to have a whole lot more of our children.
That's right. Minnesota is worst I ever seen about kids.
Well, I can assure you, sir, it's going on all over the country. And because the enemy knows, this system knows we are not organized well enough to fight back. And we must do that. We're going to talk more about how we're going to do that.
Yes. That's the problem, okay? Minnesota, these foster parents get money for the kid. We even went to Supreme Court to them. We didn't want any money. We just want our grandkids. But you know, like the gentleman said a few minutes ago, white folks, and I'm going to say, white folks are going to always be white folks. We got in Supreme Court, and the lawyer for them told us, these peoples. He didn't use us by our name. He said, these peoples. Not saying the grandparent. He used these people right here. And the woman on Supreme Court said, don't use that up in here. But they still, don't address them like that, but they still gave our kids to their foster parents. But I'm going to tell you something else, and I'm going to get off this phone because I'm going to get, but see, white people, and I'm from the South, and white folks going to always be white folks. I don't give a crap what you did. They're going to always stay together. They're going to always be together. And the codes and stuff are going to always rule in their favor. I'm telling you from experience.
Yes,
and our people, like African Americans, we don't sit together.
That's
we
right.
We do not sit together. We don't sit together. We don't do nothing together. You know, and when it comes to code, because I'm, like I said, I'm telling you from experience. I'm not telling you what I heard. I've been through it. I have been through it, and you know it's a shame the way the white do the black.
Well, I went on.
Until
we stand up
and
be ready to fight back.
Yeah.
Realistically, all across the board, they are going to continue to do what they do. But Brother Larry, I want to thank you for your comments. I really appreciate what you said, and believe me, many of us feel the same way. And you're right. It's time that we really now understand this, but it's also time that we now do something about it. So thank you, Brother Larry.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. We're going to go to one more caller, and we're going to go back to Sister Shahida. Caller, you're at, 1716. We're going to open up your mic, okay? Caller at 1716. You have a comment or a question for us tonight?
Yes. Greetings, Sister Empress T, Sister Shahida, and all the guests who's listening,
mm-hmm.
Sister. My heart goes out to you. I'm from Pittsburgh, PA. I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Here, anniversary of the Million Man March. But I live in Spokane, Washington. And I have to tell you that I went to a meeting today with the Men of March who've been meeting for 18 years since the Million Man March, every
mm-hmm.
Saturday. And even have a junior Million Man March group. The brothers were so passionate when I told them about your story. One of the brothers wanted to know, first of all, where is his daddy? Because he wasn't saying that sarcastically. He was saying if that was my child, that dude would be dead twice. He said he wouldn't have made it to suspension or jail. You know, but again, more than that, we're having a conversation about hooking up with Sister Filet because we need to do something collectively, black men and black women across the country. And we have on the table the topic of doing security nationally to start with. You know, unifying, you know, regardless of what religion you are, what set you're from, whatever, you black, you need to be here. Friends of black people. And we need to stand tall and stand fast with each other. And sisters need to come together as well because, again, with all these conversations, if you think about the animal world, for example, you know, when you have stragglers, animals feed on you. You know, the wild will feed on you when you have stragglers, the small, the young, the slow. That's the ones who get eaten. And it's time for us to come together, and we have the intelligence, we have the skills, we have the money. We spend $1 trillion a year as consumers. And stop talking about going to somebody's Supreme Court. Our Supreme Court is us as a family, as a village. Because ain't nobody in a village and taking nothing from us, not our child, not our animals, or nothing else. Nobody has that kind of strength to go to an African village. But we forgot our Africanness.
That's
We've
right.
We've been living somebody else's paradigm. We've been living somebody else's definitions. So we continue to perpetuate them by supporting their business. Everybody's business is but ours. You you know. And so, again, sister, I love you, and my prayers go out with you. And I don't know where his daddy or his uncles or his grandfather is, but it just hurts my heart that you're telling me ain't nobody paying attention to this in Pittsburgh. That's not the way I grew up. That's not the way I grew up there. And I haven't been there for a long time, but that's my hometown, the Hill District. You know, my family graduated from Heron Hill and Shenley High School.
Wow.
So it hurts my heart to hear that that's happening at this point, at this time. It hurts. But I'm just saying encouragingly to even Sister Dorothy and about adoption, every aspect of our lives, you know, we must come together. We must. We need to do it immediately, like yesterday, you know. Get the sisters to join with the Million Woman Movement and the brothers get to join with the Million Man March Movement and let's get together. You know, quarterly, annually, semi, whatever it is, we need to hook up. If over 2 million black men was at the Million Man March and over 2-point-something million was at the Million Woman March, we got a target market of over almost 4.5 million people.
Absolutely.
To say, okay, do something.
Absolutely.
Let's do something.
Absolutely.
I'm ready. So I'm ready. I'm encouraging it. That's what I'm here talking to the elders about. So, sister, I love you, and I pray that God intervene personally and handle this by any means necessary.
I say. That's right. Hi, Shay, Brother James. Thank you so much. And, you know, we're going to be in touch. We'll be talking later on this week about, you know, some of the business possibilities because some of us are very serious about empowering our communities, strengthening our village, but also building our nation. And so you're going to hear us talk more about that on this radio program, needless to say. And as Brother James indicated, sisters, you know, the call is going out to you all. The brothers are going to do what they need to do, but the sisters got to do what we got to do. And so, you know, we figured out a way to begin to address some of our issues as women, as sisters, so that we can get some of this work done that we need to get done. We figured out some ways that we can be more connected and more in solidarity. And we're going to be sharing some of that with you as we proceed tonight and in the very near future. So, Brother James, again, I want to thank you. You're on point as usual. And we're going to keep you abreast as well as we proceed in providing support and, you know, just some overall love for Sister Shahida and our family. So we're going to definitely keep you abreast of.
I thank all of you so much. And to answer Brother James' question about Shannon's father, Shannon carries his father's namesake, and you would think that he would be here for his child. Instead, he made my child feel as if it was his fault about what happened to him. You know, he assured my child that, you know, I told you never to let nobody in your face, well, in your personal circle is what he calls it. You know, so his thing is he's worried about the dollar amount outcome of the situation versus the criminal sincerity part of the situation. You know, my child, he suffers from schizophrenia. You know, at one time he was suicidal. Over the years through counseling and therapy and working with him, those thoughts were just thoughts, you know, instead of him going with a plan of action. But there was days that, you know, I was up at night, and I have to watch my child as he, you know, I would have to hide the knives and put my other children in my room with me and kind of like lock him in the room so that he hurt himself or hurt anyone else throughout the household. I mean, it took some time, it took some years, and I don't want what once was a thought to become a part or a plan of action today because of the situation and the scars that are on his face, because he's still asking me the questions of why. Mom, why did this happen? You know, all I said was hi. I just was being nice. You can't speak to nobody no more. but back to his father. His father is no longer in the picture, you know, with the four children that I do have by him.
Yeah.
Only because I won't be with him. And I feel like if I have to be with you for you to be step up and be a man, then I don't need you to be a part of what we got going on here.
Yes, ma'am. But Sister Shahida, even if I wasn't in your life with you, you know, as in a relationship, that still doesn't relieve me of my responsibility to my child.
Right, but only to a real man.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, I got you. I hear you.
You know,
this is what.
I mean,
go ahead, sister. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He's 38 years old. He's been in and out of the system, you know.
Okay.
And I'm not making no excuses up for him, you know, for not being a father. But there was a time where I was going to go into the Army in service, and he didn't want to step be a man then. And I ended up going to go file for full sole custody of my children. So that's what I have now. I don't ask him for child support. I don't ask him for money. All I ask him is for time to be a father with his children. And because I'm not in the picture with him, he doesn't want to be. So just like the judge told me, I'm sorry, Ms. Manley, but I can't make somebody who don't want to be something, you know, be something for your children. Obviously, he's not the right man that's supposed to be there for your children. Even though he might have fathered them biologically, he still is the right man that needs to be there for your children. So until that right man comes along, I'm okay with being a single mother, raising my children on my own.
And that was a big part of our dialogue in terms of the Million Man March group. March stands for Men Are Responsible to Cultivate Hope. And one of the things that we talked about in terms of getting our people across this country to come together is that we're going to have to deal with people where they're at. And a lot of us is going to have to go through rites of passage. You know, we need to get to a point where each one can teach one, or we can teach in groups or villages or whatever we call them. But it's a time that we need to start learning and again, creating our own systems, our own training, our own, you know, learning what protocol is and God's authority in terms of how we see it, not somebody else. Because that's unacceptable. You know, if you were my sister, you know, I would have to have words with that brother, you know. I only got one sister. She's the oldest, and she's never put me and my brother, and I'm the youngest, in that position where we have to step to a brother. We've only stepped to one, and he knows. He laid hands on my sister. That brother knew. I will never, ever hit another sister with brothers. When he woke up, I'm sure he knew. I will never, ever do that again. I will always ask the sister, hey, you got any brothers? You know?
And I have brothers. And, you know, my oldest brother, he's been the biggest support possible when it comes to being a father to father figure or male role model to all three of my boys. You know, they look up to him. They worship the ground that he walks on. So I just appreciate the fact that I was blessed with having him to be a part and help out as much as he can help out and show the love and show the support to my boys. So I'm grateful for that.
Yes, ma'am. And keep in mind that just because we get in contact with people who have, like, names and accolades and TV shows and different things like that, it's sometimes the small people that you wouldn't even imagine that can make the most impact in terms of what you're seeking.
That's right.
Man, talk to anybody and everybody you possibly can. I mean, be relentless. You know, don't stop. And I mean, from the media to the law to everybody you possibly can. Law professors, you name it. You'll be surprised what you come up with.
Well, I have, and there's actually a guy on Facebook. His name is Eugene Taylor. And he's been a big help, big support. He has helped us you know, Shannon and I in so many ways possible with reaching out to different people and referring me here and making phone calls there. And I greatly appreciate Mr. Eugene for everything that he has done dealing with this situation as far as me and my child. And I appreciate everyone who has showed their support and who has changed their pictures to my son's picture and just kept his movement going. And I plan on going all the way with this to the end. And I'm not just doing it just for my child, but for all children. And maybe there will be other parents who can kind of come out of that shell of thinking that there's nothing that they can do against the system and come out and speak upon what has happened. And we all take a stand. You know, my plan is to go from state to state and go to the board and see if I'm able to go into the schools and tell my son's story and tell what happened, and hopefully the outcome, you know, is a lot greater than where things are now.
Yes, ma'am. But again, if this ever gets done, and even if you don't, get attached to something, some community organization. We have to get together, Sister Shattuck, because this is going to keep happening to us. I'm hearing too many cases and seeing too many things. I mean, putting handcuffs on a 5-year-old, arresting a 7-year-old, taking him to jail, and, of course, all black children. I mean,
right.
This country, I think, is testing us. You know, what would we do if they, when they killed the old lady, I think it was in New York, when they went in and killed her, talking about they went in the wrong house for a drug bust. They killed her.
No, Atlanta. That was Atlanta. I think she was 8 years old.
Absolutely. I mean, what are we waiting on? I mean, we can't wait on it to happen just in our immediate family. You know, we must stand together and stop this madness, ASAP. You know, and my recommendation, again, all the sisters sign up with the Million Women Movement. All the brothers sign up with the Million Men March. You know, let's get together somewhere large, whether it's via satellite or in a stadium or in the public, and do our thing, show some love. During the Million Man March, the energy was so high. During the Million Woman March, the energy, the spirit. I mean, you couldn't even describe it. You know, it was indescribable. But we deserve to live that every day. Every day.
All right, my brother. Well, we're going to move on. I think we have Dr. Randy Short is ready to join us. But before we bring Dr. Randy Short in, I'm going to take one more call. But Brother James, thank you so much. As I said, we're going to stay in touch. And you know we got some things that are being planned, and we're going to implement them. So you're on point,
ma'am.
And listeners, those who are listening to our program, they're listening because they're ready too. So
yes,
the only ones that, for the most part, the people that are listening that ain't ready are just the spies and the agents. But the rest of the folks, they're listening because they don't wait next year for the next step. Okay?
Right.
So it's all good. So, Brother James, thank you so much. We're going to take one more call before we bring in Dr. Randy Short. And, caller, you are at 8374. Do you have a comment or question for us tonight? Here we are.
500 for anyone with information that leads to the arrest.
All right. So now, let us move on. We're going to go to our live line here, and we're going to bring in our brother, Dr. Randy Short, who sometimes co-hosts with me. I guess I could say co-host, but he's been tuning in, sister, and he's been listening. I could tell, and I can tell you that when he listens, he definitely has, you know, something very poignant to respond or to say. So we're going to do that, and we want to remind everyone the chat room is open. So feel free to please go there. We'll communicate with you there as well. Take any questions or comments that you have as well. And what we're going to do now, of course, is, again, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Dr. Randy Short. We're going to talk a little more with Sister Shahida, and then we're going to have Brother Randy tell us something about the latest development in the murder of Malcolm Latif Shabazz, which, of course, is the grandson of El Hajj Malik Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X. We're very committed to making certain that we continue to look into the murder of young Malcolm, because there's certainly some things there that need to be discovered or disclosed, and we're about making sure that happens. But again, before we give you that update, we're going to go back to Sister Shahida, and we're going to talk to Dr. Randy Short in regards to this young 12-year-old brother who has sustained 52 stitches by a white male, 16 years old. Oh, Sister Shahida, tell me again, too. Now, I know some of you might think this is trivial or, you know, it doesn't really matter, but when you have to analyze situations, these kinds of things are important. Age is important. Race is important, but also size is important when you're evaluating this type of thing. Well, Sister Shahida, before we bring Dr. Randy Short in, just tell us the size of both of these young men, young males. Your son is roughly... Go ahead.
My son, he's 12 years old. He's about 4'2", 4'3", maybe 110 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
The attacker... He is 16, he's 6 foot, he's 270 pounds.
Wow.
So big, yeah. I mean, I would have probably took off and ran.
I think we have Brother Randy Short with us. Greetings to you, my brother. Brother Randy,
hello.
Do we have you? Yeah, do we have you? Okay, yeah, I said greetings to you.
Yeah. Jim, oh, thank you. Greetings to you. I'm riding shotgun. I have a professor from Bethune-Cookman University. I don't know if you want to name mention, because at HBCUs, if you help young people, they don't keep you on the payroll. Among the many struggles we need to fight is teachers who advocate for students are persecuted all over the country. So that's just mentioning that. I won't say his name, but he's a filmmaker, and that's part of my thought. Sister Shahid, I want to say to you from the bottom of my heart that when I received a notice from Sister Empress Queen Chi a day or two ago, I was on Facebook for about 3 hours posting the photo and the story of your child all over Facebook.
Yeah,
and I had people responding. They wanted a way to contact you. And I want to say to you, I'm not talking from my mouth. If I had my hair cut short, you could see that I have a crack that goes across the top of my head. A white boy put 4 concussions on my skull, hitting me with a rock, which caused me to bleed for hours when I was 4. And nothing, in fact, I almost got in trouble for the boy busting my head open. So I can recall my teacher interrogating, trying to get me when I was semi-conscious to admit that I had caused him to bust my head open.
Wow.
So when I saw that, I immediately says, oh, I'm in this one. Oh, I can recall. And by the way, nothing was ever done about this, and I regret to say my father, who never left my mother, wasn't that supportive. I want to disagree with a lot of what's been said. I actually believe that part of any movement of men, we need to have a photo of this boy's father, and we need to write him all over the internet and appeal to him and all other black fathers to defend their children. If he's tough enough to swag through a cell block, he's tough enough to emotionally stand for his son, or he needs to at least face the scrutiny. I am so sick and tired of black men making excuses for not fighting. I'm not talking about taking a brick or a bottle, but being there if they can. And he can do this. And I just want to say to you that there was a young man in my circle who wasn't paying child support. I did not know it. And when we found out he wasn't paying child support, we disassociated ourselves from him until he started doing something in the life of his son. A lot of black men, being a man, again, is a big penis thing. I mean, these brothers would try to put their penis in a rattlesnake's mouth if they could keep it open, with no fear of the fangs. And I'm sick of it. Okay, we shame this brother. I wouldn't take his calls or speak to him until he did something to get right with that boy's mother. We didn't say marry her. We didn't say finance, but don't come and hang with us and play ball or whatever, and you got a kid crying somewhere? When are we black men going to say, I don't want to be around a black man who's not at least trying to do something? Let's say you don't have employment, but somehow give something to your child. You show pictures of these babies. You boast about how strong your sperm is. Well, what about your stand when white society attacks your child? It's your baby. Now, had it been a black man that had hit their kid, he would have been willing to do something. So there's a lot of fear of the white man and even the so-called street Negroes that I see, or so-called tough black men. They're sorry. They will not stand up for anything. I've watched the cops mistreat folks, women, and the brothers huddle around like cowards. You'd cut another black man's throat for having on the same pair of tennis shoes. When are we going to start saying, you're not a man, you're a male? And we expect to see. So I actually think you should at least show a picture, because I got asked through Facebook, where was the guy's father? Y'all, it takes two to tango. Someone help you make that baby. He could at least be expected to write a letter of support or use his network of men to say, we don't want this happening. They don't know all about him. If they thought that him and some other fathers would be there, whether they're employed or not, their attitude would be different. When they have black men and black women divided, they use that to crush both of us. I just want to put that out. And I don't care what black men who run from this reality feel about it. I don't have children, but if I did, if I can bring them here, I've got to fight for them. Everybody else does. And everybody else doesn't make excuses. And there's so much that happens. And the reason that your story touches me, I can recall hearing two older black men talk and justify a five-year-old boy being raped by a man in his 20s, and they figured the boy should have been strong enough to fight off the grown man. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of this garbage calling itself black manhood. It's black male cowardice. It's what I call social faggotry, because we always talk about how certain black men aren't a man. I've seen folks AC/DC and drag with more heart and soul than a whole bunch of folks boast about all the women they got and not protecting none of them, not fighting for none of them. Their children are dying in the street. When is this black manhood going to mean something? And I'm not talking about a revolution. I'm just talking about the kid not getting lacerated at school.
That's right. And so I'm glad that you said something about, not to cut you off, but I'm glad you said something about putting a picture up there of him. I actually have a picture on my Facebook page that as soon as we hang up, I'm going to share on Shannon's Justice Shannon page, a picture with him and his son where I put him on blast today to let everybody know that he was a deadbeat father and that he does nothing for his children by no means necessary.
And you need to put out that had he been in this child's life more actively, they would have thought twice about attacking his son, because a whole lot of black men that are not engaged on any level with their children don't realize that their negligence opens up our women and children to be butchered. I mean, it's a choice. A non-choice is a choice. You see a fire in your house and you walk away, you are essentially an arsonist. You help the structure burn down. Tired of the excuses. Should have doubled up, wrapped it up. Don't want to wrap up, don't want to do nothing, then don't want to be responsible, but want to pass around Polaroids and say, I'm a man. bull. Now, what's my solution for you? My first solution is we need to talk the same way I was talking to Sister Dunning, because I think we've got some things to try. One, we need a video. Sister Filet, somebody has the capacity to capture this mother talking, and we need to put this up and see if we can push it viral. And we need to get everybody to commit that we're going to spend a couple of days, even if it's an hour or two per day, blogging this everywhere we can. Now, the other thing I need from you, sister, because I hear you say you want to go from city to city, and this will be my appeal to everyone that comes on this Queen Cheese show. The National Million Women's Movement needs activists and actors in every section of this country, because it's everywhere we're being attacked. In fact, if Negroes lived on the moon, whites would be trying to figure out a way to send their trash and their bad cops there to kill us. That's just the fact. We would like for you to be part, the same way I'm asking Mother Dunning and Mississippi. Her thing would be looking out to fight against the child welfare system. You need to become a general to fight against the abuse of children in schools. That brother that spoke from the million man whose heart is just as righteous and pure, I believe that we could then couple relationships, even if you just have a handful of people. There is a friend of mine I lost contact with. She's a sister in Philly. There was some community center that was affiliated with the National Congress of Black Women. I can't remember the woman's name. I haven't been in touch with her for years, but she was strong. Part of what happens is if you can think of who this sister is, there's a community center where the lady, if she's still alive, she's committed.
Mm-hmm,
we need to be networking to find who are like us. We only need 2% or less of the black community engaged and involved to help the other 98%, even if they're sorry as hell. The problem is we don't have an energized 2%, not even an energized 1%. So the question I would say to you is, do you have 10, 15 names of women and men that will stand? Find them. And even if they're somewhere else in Pennsylvania, find them. That becomes the core. You need a video. You need to also, I want your information, because I'm thinking all of us who know people who have blog programs, blog radio, we can at least begin to put you out before thousands of other people. If a video and a blog radio is one, and then you have a Facebook page, Facebook has its limitations. You need to get a free web page. Let me tell you what they were doing to you. I got 30 complaints yesterday that they had shut your page down through Facebook. People couldn't see it.
Wow.
Facebook doesn't like black activism, so it's limited there. You need to go to WordPress or someplace and set up your blog. You can put the videos, you can put anything you want, and it's free. It'll take you like 15 minutes to set up your own. If you have it already, wonderful. But whatever it is that, and you've got to find a way to push that out. In fact, do you have an Instagram account?
No, I do not.
Instagram is how you get young people who would be grossed out. Trayvon Martin is proof that Instagram works. You need to have an Instagram account. It's free. Go set it up. Send that boy's picture everywhere. And I'll tell you something. If you can get the names or the photos of the head of the schools or whichever peckerwood you need to have a picture of your baby and a grinning cracker next to it. Put that up on Facebook. Put it up on Instagram. Our people need to see who their enemies are. And please, so get their faces, get their names. If they're black, if they're a traitor, you should get them. The other thing is there's got to be within your union of teachers there, they may be sorry, but there might be some black contingent. Perhaps you can find maybe one or two teachers in the system who aren't afraid to be fired. Because those folks, they've got to exist. There's got to be one that cares.
I think I do have one.
Then, and so that's This is key. The other thing I'm going to say to you, sister, you've got the University of Pitt. You've got some universities. You need to shop every single solitary black student alliance that's in the area that you can find, because if you've got people that are interested and energized younger, then you've got something that you can at least pull on. The other thing I would say to you is that you need to yourself, when you put out communication, you need to have an email or something that's one that you don't mind getting all kinds of junk and hate things coming to. So create another one where people can contact you. Secondly, my thought is the ABA has got to be a Pittsburgh ABA. If it's not there, this is where paralegal Rajakhan should be able to help. But to find people who know how to make those systems work, in addition to that, I really, again, want your contacts. I'll get it from Sister Phile, because I'm thinking that we could have you before a couple of people and see if we can find, at least for radio or whatever, some partners, because this need not be like this. I mean, that upsets me. It's happened to me in 1969. To think that it's still this crazy, not that I'm surprised, but, I mean, they're acting worse towards you, and I'm in the South, than what happened to me. You up north, if they're doing that, imagine what they'll do in Florida, like that boy who fell between the mats, whose organs they stole. And I have a friend who knows the boy's family. So we need to bring some of this together. In fact, my mothers, we need to start unifying, whether it's my exact cause or not. There almost has to be a Black Children's or African American Children's Defense League within the National Million Women's Movement. Okay, it's needed. This is your calling. This is your challenge. So you've got a gang now, you know, but when you're in a gang, you know, I initiate, either you get beaten in or you have to go out and knock someone upside the head to show that you got some nuts.
Right.
Or whatever, ovaries, I guess. I'm sorry, I was sexist. Well, here's your chance. Take on these people because you got a gang now, and some of us are quite lethal. I'm of the impression that this story in particular – this is something that needs, and I just tell you, some of y'all need to pick it. You need to find out how you guys can do another press conference, because what you need to do is have all the teachers there who let your child get attacked. You should be pressing for them to all go into sensitivity training. You should be calling for a psychiatrist to deal with all the trauma of the students there. You need to treat this like what white folks do. You need to say that other children there are going to be the victims of violence because the trauma that they witnessed, nothing was done about it. And, a lot of people in America are dominated by fear. If you don't have a way to frighten them, they don't care. You have to make the other parents understand that their children are going to get their faces slashed or worse if nothing's done about this. Last but not least, sister, I'm a Christian. I'm apostolic by background. However, I'm affiliated with the CCHR. It's the Citizens Commission for Human Rights. It is affiliated with the Church of Scientology. No, I follow Jesus, not L. Ron Hubbard. However, L. Ron Hubbard's group, and not the people that follow Jesus, have financed an organization that goes after pharmaceutical companies that push these drugs on young people. And I strongly, strongly recommend that you see, because they have a CCHR in the state of Pennsylvania. They may even have a branch in Pittsburgh. You may be able to sue the drug company for which drugs that boy was on that attacked your son. I don't know if you understand that.
I do understand it. I just never thought of it.
Well, yeah, that's okay. That's what weird people like me are here for. I don't have a problem with you having my number. So we can do okay. that. Then the other thing I'm going to say to you about your son and schizophrenia, you need to talk to Dr. Ray Wimbush at Morgan State, because nowadays they're saying that all the black people have schizophrenia. Okay? My grandmother was abused in the mental hospital and died in 1969 from schizophrenia. And in reality, my grandmother spoke our indigenous language, which is Piscataqua, where you get the word Potomac and Anacostia and all these other words around we see from. When this woman would speak in her language, they would say she was crazy. I'm not saying I can diagnose because I don't know your child, but you really need to find yourself some black folks who are really good professionals, because they're really, even some of the black folks you can't trust, get somebody that you know loves his or her people and let them talk to you and your child, because these people are destroying folks. These drugs that they push on people cause an absolute minimum, I'm talking about psychotropic drugs, 40,000 deaths in this country every year. That's more people than the Korean War. In 2 years, that's more people than Vietnam. In 3 years, that's more people than World War I. That's how many people die from these things that they can really directly trace. So those people who are directing these things towards your child may be harming this child in ways that that child doesn't need to be, in spite of real problems. I want to point you also to the CCHR website, cchr.org. Across the top tab, there's going to be videos. You need to look and see the thing called the DSM. It's a Diagnostical Statistical Manual. Mm-hmm. It's a fraud. The National Institute of Mental Health no longer uses that. The DSM is used to push drugs, in particular on destroying our people. There's also another documentary called The Marketing of Madness. Are people being targeted? It's linked to childhood suicide and all these other things. So they're setting your child up. If they're in an environment with racists and your child has any challenges and then he's on something, and you won't believe it, ultimately, if your child should have a reaction to that drug, they can say that you're not a good parent and take your child away.
Right. And what happened was,
black women everywhere.
What happened was he's no longer on medication anymore. It's been a couple of years since he's been on medication. The medications that they did prescribe for him in the past that I've noticed, and that's why I have not put him on anything else, because I figure everything that he was prescribed would only settle in his body and stay there for 90 days. Within 90 days, his body would reject it, which would cause him to go through withdrawal and have a more of a psychotic behavior.
Right.
And I've witnessed.
When did he come off?
It's been about maybe 2 years now that he's been off.
You need to see if you can sue them. You need to check.
And the school is the one who supplied it.
Who?
The school, Presley Ridge, is the one who's
supplied. You need to prepare yourself to sue the school. Yeah, because they're doing this. They're just destroying us. They're doing it. They're taking the children or drugging the children or not educating the children. They're going to get that one out of three people in jail by hook or by crook.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to also raise the banner to the mothers that, you know, they complain. You know, I live here in D.C., and it should be called Dog City, not the District of Columbia, because they harass young black men for having a little teeny tiny plastic bag with a little weed, mostly seeds in it, and the seeds grow too.
Right.
And yet all the white folks are on medical marijuana. All of a sudden everybody white needs medical marijuana. It's cool. They've got shops for you to smoke weed in. And all the while, I mean, if you have a big bong, I mean, a thing almost as big as the World Trade Center that they're carrying around to smoke marijuana because it's medical, and yet black folks are being harassed for drugs they're not even using. And on one hand, you're jailing us for the illegal drugs that are legal for them, and then Those who don't use that, they get put on these prescriptions. What you need to understand is once your child uses the prescriptions, that goes in their record. People won't hire them when they come out of school. The military won't take them when they come out of school. So they're finding ways to deny us an opportunity to even be in this doggone slave economy with these drugs. Not to mention all the things that they do. In particular, every single solitary mass shooting, whether it was the woman that got shot, assassinated, should I say, by the Capitol Hill cops, who everybody knows are racist from Eastern Shore, Maryland, that none of us like. That's why black people don't even go down to the mall, even if they think they're selling stuff down there. The man that shot up the Navy Yard, he was on these drugs. The kid at Sandy Hook on the drugs. The man in Aurora, Colorado, on these same drugs. They know it. The kids that shot up Columbine, the kids down in Jasper, everywhere you look, these people are using these things. They know it makes people violent. They know it makes people kill. So, and if you start seeing all these black folks doing strange stuff, when they do strange things, we get hooked or put on these drugs. It becomes another reason to be brutal and violent with black people. You know, he may be on those psychotropics, so let's shoot first. So that's all I'm going to say on that. We can push these people back. They are not so mighty. It's that we've decided to be weak. Old song they used to sing down south, the nigger and the white man playing 7-Up. The nigger beat the white, but he's afraid to pick it up. He had to work the next day. So they're two men playing dice. And in that game of chance, the black man won. But because the white man was over him, he had to be a loser so he could keep on losing. We need to stop being losers by choice, because we'll keep losing if we don't stop being losers.
That's right.
All right. As usual, quite profound. Sister Shahida, as you can tell, our folks here at New Day are quite serious and quite adequate in what they do. So you can see you definitely have folks who are not only prepared to be supportive, but really prepared to take some action. And certainly with some of the things that Dr. Renshut just mentioned, I think we are off to an excellent start in really fighting back and with that winning.
I would definitely agree. I mean, I feel like this is the most strongest support that I've gotten so far. So I'm grateful for what I'm hearing and, you know, what is set to come forth.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now you see why I conveyed to you what I did in terms of making certain that we stay connected and that communications, you know, really flow. It's so important because there are people who will work and do things and help, but there has to be, you know, adequate communications, responses, and so forth. And since I gave you that tidbit, that information, you certainly have been right on point. So I thank you for that.
I thank you for reaching out to me.
And I've got to mention, too, with that said, a sister by the name of Carla. I saw this story just briefly, I guess when it first happened, but it just kind of, I get so much information and so much mail. I'm sitting up here now with 90,000 emails, and that's just for one account. So I get a lot of communications on a daily basis. But a sister named Carla, right here in Philadelphia, heard about the story, heard about your son, and texted me directly. And so usually if a sister, this is what I'm trying to tell sisters, y'all need to listen. We have a powerful base. And if sisters just kind of connect the way we've designed it, there is no sister in any city or in any state that will not be able to get some immediate assistance, immediate help when it comes to certain matters. But we have to be organized because, again, the sister texts me. She told me about what was happening. She said, well, you know, then I called her. She told me more. And then she said, well, okay,
can you talk with the sister? I said, sure. And here we are.
And I thank her for that. She reached out to me and let me know what she was doing, who she was going to try to reach out to, and see what type of responses that she would get. And I gratefully appreciate her for everything that she has done. She has definitely been a big help and a big support through all of this. And actually, me and Sister Carter, we kind of try to keep in touch every day, almost every day. If you know, her lifestyle is too busy, or if my lifestyle isn't too busy, and we talk about things that, you know, that are going on and how I'm feeling and how she's feeling. And I definitely am grateful for having her.
I thank you. We're going to take one more quick call, and then we're going to go to our last segment of tonight. We only have about 20 minutes, and I want to make sure that Dr. Randy Schwitt is able to give us this update on Malcolm Latif Shabazz, because, family, we would just be remiss, is not even the word, if we don't attempt to find out what happened to this young brother. He is the grandson, and I said is. I didn't say was. And there's a reason for that, because his spirit, for some of us, is just that strong. And so, but we would just be, I mean, beyond shame on us if we allow for this brother's death, the grandson of one of the greatest black men that we know of in our time, if we just sat back and just went, oh, wow, he's dead. And I mean, we can't do that. So we want to make sure we're able to get some, you know, ongoing updated information so we know how to respond in the future. But before we get that, we're going to take one more call in regards to Sister Shahida, and then we'll go to our last segment for tonight with Dr. Randy Short and my report regarding Malcolm Latif Shabazz. So, caller, you're at 7492. We're going to have a few moments, but you've been holding, so I want to bring you in so we can get your comments. 7492.
Yeah, I hope y'all can hear me clearly on a cell phone and maybe not be functioning too well. But I'd just like to make a couple statements about what has been said tonight. And I think a brother earlier mentioned that it seemed like they're testing us, you know, to see what we're going to do. And I think his analysis is true. I think all these things are done intentionally for two reasons. One, they want to continue to terrorize us so they can keep us in fear and rule us in fear. And two, they actually do want us to respond so they can justify trying to, you know, eradicate as many African people as they can. This is what they really do want. And the reality is we are at war.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand it. You know, to solve the problem, you've got to pose, you know, the correct solution to it. You know, we are at war. So when you're at war, all love and fail. And there will be casualties in all kind of forms. And unfortunately, you know, with our youth, I think like one white boy said years back, you know, if you kill a man, you don't have to worry about him later. So this is the kind of history and this is the kind of attitude that they have toward people in general, particularly towards African people. But in terms of all the issues that are going on, I think it also becomes important for us to find a way to collectively organize our resources. So as I stated earlier, you know, we as people, we are not poor people, we just are poorly organized. And you will see these kind of cases springing up all over the country. And fundamentally, you know, we know they need resources in order to address many of these cases. But individually, you know, we may not have the resources, but collectively we do. Then they say maybe we need to put together some kind of collective website or collective group where all the folks, you know, who have these problems, they come under one umbrella, and we actually have people all over to donate money into one super fund where this money will be used to assist these folks. It's just as this sister would need help. I'm an advocate of a case of Michael Fulton, a young brother who they tried to frame up by the use of computers or using pornography. And right now, they're about to hang him. He got about 2 weeks before he go to court. And this case is just really crazy. He got about 2 weeks to go to court now. And when you go to court, it's probably a good chance the brother might end up any prisons because of the fact that they just outright railroaded the brother, and we have not had any kind of resources to bring any kind of lawyers, anybody forward to prove it innocent. So, if like they say, if they can do it to one, they can do it to all of us. So I'd like to just suggest two things. Number one, we look at all of these cases that's going on together, find some kind of website where people can go on and see them, and do some kind of organization where we can collectively raise resources and distribute them among the collective issues that are confronting our people. Because as we go one by one, they become very difficult. And my second point is, I'm beginning to have a serious problem with our so-called lawyers. I had a discussion with a lawyer, and he stated that he knows once you're accused, if you ain't got no money, then you're going to pay the time. Now, I have a problem with that. I don't say, how in the hell it take a lawyer $40,000 to take a simple case where you can just find somebody who can prove that the information that was sent to someone's computer came from somewhere else? I don't know why those of us who have the technology who do that kind of work, they will charge people $10,000 or $20,000 for that service. See, the problem is capitalism. It's capitalism. And I think we need to also address this question with our legal community in terms of their greed and their unwillingness to serve our people when we all, in reality, we created the conditions for them being able to be a lawyer from the first place of the sweat and blood of our people. So I think there needs to be some kind of sense of holding these lawyers and creating some kind of process where these lawyers become, particularly African lawyers, more responsible to serve the people and not worrying so much about no damn money. Most of these lawyers got money. They doing okay. They have, they look like they charged $46,000, knowing the brother or the sister is innocent, but say, I can't do nothing unless you come up with the money. They are part of the problem, too, some of them. They are the enemy. So I just like to put you out there, sister. Thank you for your time.
All right, my brother. Thank you. Okay, we are running out of time, and we want to Randy, Dr. Randy Short, back on with us. We're going to bring you the report that we indicated earlier in regard to the update on Malcolm Latif Shabazz. Again, we only have 5-10 more minutes, but we will continue this dialogue next week. And we're going to also bring you, sorry, I wasn't able to get back to Sister Dorothy, but I'm sure that Brother Randy can give us a little insight into some of what he spoke of with her as well, because we're talking about developing strategies on how we go. We can't just have people just keep calling and telling us about different issues and problems and cases. We've got to be more responsible and start saying, okay, now this is what we're going to do about that. So with that said, anything that we talk about here at New Day, it's also obligated, committed to coming up with some tactics and strategies to deal with it. So, again, we're going to go back to Dr. Randy Short. We want to thank, that was Brother Lee. We're going to get Brother Lee back on very shortly because you all need to get ready to go to Cuba with us. So next week we'll talk more about that because time is getting short for that as well, and we want to get make sure people have the information. So, but for right now, we're going to go back to Dr. Randy Short and talk about Malcolm Latif Shabazz.
Brothers and sisters, yes, I'm here. Brothers and sisters, I'm going to try to be very brief and concise and just reprise everyone that on May 9th, 2013, Malcolm Latif Alhaj al-Shabazz died due to blunt trauma to the body. There are many different stories, and the one that seems to be most consistent with what people have been able to determine is that he was beaten with blunt objects to the point of basically a 21st century Emmett Till-style beating, with severe abuse to his body. Okay, that's one. We also know that Malcolm went to Mexico, and what wasn't clear, we didn't have a timeline. What we did not have prior to a sister came forward who had been watching work I've been doing with the sister by the name of Lady of Judah on Facebook, and she had watched people who were opposed to what we're doing. There are people in the community who claim to be friends or supporters of Malcolm Shabazz, who, for the strangest of reasons, have made it very hard for anybody to understand what really happened. I mean, and you've got to see that as not a good thing, and a best case scenario, and a worst case scenario, they're hiding things for reasons that don't make sense, other than there's something to hide on their part, or someone has them hiding, whoever those someones are, state, personal, or otherwise. Having said that, this sister who came forward, who we call Arabic NJ, had a trove of emails showing what Malcolm was doing in late April and early May. One of the things that we know is that Malcolm initially flew out to California, had planned to go to Oregon, and according to the emails that we have, there were government agents or whoever, police forces, that prompted him to go into hiding for 2 days. This is in late April, so maybe April 28th until April 30th, Malcolm basically went undercover for a couple of days. He did not go to Oregon. He, in that period of time, ran into two persons, and actually three persons. One person is the mother of his son that was born, I believe. There's a new son, a new member of that family, Malcolm Shabazz II, I believe born August 9th, 2013. This boy's mother picked up Malcolm and kept Malcolm. While Malcolm was in Los Angeles, the two people from RUMEC, forgive me, for Miguel Juarez, and there's another one whose last name is Ruiz. The mother of his child said that these men, when they came to see Brother Shabazz, wouldn't even look him in the face when they were asking him to go to Mexico. Malcolm had no intentions of going. They offered him several hundred dollars, $800 to be exact, with more to come if he went. So the idea was to go to Tijuana and then to Mexico City via bus, and then to go to Veracruz to do some speaking for Afro-Mexican groups. And what needs to be known is that the woman who drove Malcolm to the house, she said she cried the whole time. She felt something bad would happen to him. Rolling further, Miguel Juarez, his mother drove Malcolm and Miguel to the border point. They crossed over. I think they spent the night in Tijuana, either on the 30th of April or the 1st of May. And they took a bus going from Tijuana to Mexico City. One of the emails, Malcolm communicates later on that he was with dangerous people. It was a lot of garbage that he was involved in, that he didn't even understand what was happening. And we know that he should have reached Mexico City about the 3rd of May. That's the same day he wrote me. What most people are not aware or remembering is that President Obama was in Mexico City on May 3rd. He was right in Mexico City, and then he went from Mexico to Costa Rica on the following day. Anyone that knows anything about presidential travel, all of the agents and secret people, they're everywhere. They're at the bus stations, airports. They're looking at everything. Right? You understand what I'm saying? Anyone that knows anything about the CIA knows Mexico City is one of the most important hub centers for CIA operations in Latin America. Malcolm is there for the next few days. One of the things that needs to be clear is that there are misgivings, and in fact, there's a complaint in the email communications that the person chose a bar for Malcolm to stay in versus staying someplace else. What's questionable about this is that the bar that where these activities were supposed to be taken, where his life ended up being taken, was that it was a place for human trafficking and other complaints from local Mexicans. This is in the Millennial paper that's in English from Mexico City. So Malcolm was taken to a very dangerous place. If Mr. Miguel Juarez is as true to what he said to others, he didn't even know that section of Mexico City, and it wasn't safe for black people. So taking him there, aside from it being dangerous, had to be crazy. We also know once Malcolm was killed, this sister, Arabigin Jay, was able to speak to the man who abandoned Malcolm, Mr. Miguel Juarez, who lied about taking Malcolm to the hospital, which was not true. This man was told, according to our source, not to tell anybody what happened to Malcolm except for to tell a man whose name is Cleveland Del Rey Jr., also known as J.R., and Malcolm's imam were the only people he could talk to. And this is significant because when those stories came out of Malcolm being killed in Tijuana, all these things happening to Malcolm in Tijuana, how could they say Tijuana if the man on the ground was in Mexico City telling them Mexico City, why would another city be used repeatedly? And why wasn't there retraction? And 5 months, nobody from this group has come forward to really say that was an error. This is what really happened. If you care about people, wouldn't you want the truth surrounding their death to be known? Is that too much for a friend of his, such as myself, and us, to know at least what really happened? Are you feeling me, Sister Filet? I mean,
absolutely.
Is that outrageous? Doesn't that seem strange that the same people who would pay for his burial and wash his body and bury him didn't want people to know the actual reality of the events surrounding his death? These people have ingratiated themselves to the mother of the decedent, even though the mother did not want JR in the photos or the presentation. Very few people attended this boy's funeral in Oakland. Many things were done. There's a resistance to an exhumation. There's a comment from one of the aunts that his organs may have been taken. Well, if the mother is against exhumation or an investigation, and if the mother was told to call me personally, which she did, and told me not to look into it to mind my business, and I'm being generous, there's something going on out there that these new facts come in that the people involved in burying this brother deliberately didn't let people know. It gets better. There's a woman by the name of Margaret Rose Hall. Hall spelled H-A-U-L-E. She is a woman who's been convicted of slander and libel in 2006 in Texas. You can look it up. It's a matter of the public record. If not, write Empress Filet. She should have a copy. This woman has somehow made herself a confidant to the mother. And this woman with a very strange background as a reporter and a blogger is somehow involved in the mix. And she's also connected to the people on the West Coast who've been covering up or hiding or at least not sharing information on what happened to the brother. It gets better. There are allegations. I can't substantiate them other than these are things that appear, if I'm reading correctly, that the people who tricked Malcolm to go to Mexico had some sort of illegal network going. And there's some communication that the young brother had regrets about the company that he found himself in. So, with all being said, this idea that Malcolm, for all of his troubles as a man, was a bad guy, period, is false. This young man was set up. So we have the police that saw him, that confronted him, which caused him to go into hiding, and then he goes to Mexico. We're now looking at the things that have happened. But what we do know, in the case of any cover-up, is the confusion of information, the continued suppression of information, and the co-optation of people who might say or do something. So there seems to be some sort of financial resource being extended to people in the deceased network. You tell me if that doesn't sound fishy. And I close my report here. But imagine a person that's a professional convicted liar becoming the source of information for the survivors in Malcolm X's family. You tell me if someone didn't set that up. It sounds like a setup. And as you know, Sister Empress, my dear Queen Chi, they called me today for the first time in almost 5 months because they were upset that I put this information out. And I'm not trying to be anything other than I want a timeline. That's been our one request. We just want to know what happens between late April and the 9th. And we've had to go through all of this to get just a very simple thing that could be furnished. I want to remind everyone his birthday was the 10th, not the 10th, it was the 8th. It was October 8th. I'm very thankful on my father's birthday. And by the way, his birthday is the same as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Lynn Stewart. And my father's birthday, I was able on my ancestor's birthday and my father's sister born 365 days apart to be able to have this information and share it with you and let everybody know that, yes, the same way a sister by the name of Aziza Muhammad in Texas mentioned to me, doing contract work for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, that the file on Malik Alhaj al-Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X, his file is under investigation by the FBI. That should let everybody know that when the FBI opens up a file that's been closed for 40-plus years, they see the murders as being linked. Something happened.
Wow. All right, family. Well, you heard it right here first, the New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. And we only have like 2 minutes left. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue this next week. We're going to also bring back Sister Dorothy, if she can join us, so that we can really go into some of the next steps. We want to remind all of you as well that the Many Women Movement is, in fact, on the move. We're going to have a lot of information for you for next week. We'll probably do a few special editions during the course of this week because it's difficult to try to jam a lot of stuff into 2 hours. So we don't want to rush our people. We want to be able to have ample time. So we'll probably, again, do some special editions during the course of this week leading up to October 25th, which, of course, is the actual anniversary day of the Million Woman March, and now officially the Million Woman Universal Movement. I want to thank all of you again for tuning in this evening. Of course, Dr. Randy Short, Sister Shahida, certainly thank you. And, you know, continue to stay strong. We're here with you. And we know that sometimes people say that, but anyone that knows me, Dr. Randy Short, Brother James and others, Brother Lee, they can tell you that, you know, we've been pretty consistent in what we do. This is not something we take lightly. The liberation of our people, the fight for our people, this is what we do. You know, this is what we're here to do. So you can be assured something will get done. We'll also thank Sister Dorothy and all of you, really, for tuning in. We thank all of you. We will be back later on this week, so please stay tuned. I want to remind you that we do have our fundraising membership drive in effect. Please make a donation. We don't usually ask for that, but after almost 6 years, and now that we're building a global movement, we really do need your support. You can send your contributions, donations, to National MWM, P.O. Box 53668, Philadelphia, PA, 19105. If you need more information or if you just didn't get what I just said, just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, national spelled out, mwm@aol.com. Next week, I promise you, family, we'll have a K-Pal ready for you so that we can make this simpler for you. At any rate, we thank all of you again. And we want to leave you as we sign you, and that is in the spirit of Maatenhotep. But remember, there can be no real peace, meaning Hotep, until there is truly Maat, meaning justice. Again, we move forward now with the Me Woman movement. Join us on October 25th, a rally for justice at the Justice Department. We charge genocide. Leave you now with power, prosperity, and peace.
Jackson?
Hello?
Oh, hi.